Right, it's going to be the last episode of Cow Points for the year. And obviously, there's no more tournaments. We already did the major. But one thing we were even thinking about talking about last episode, we just didn't get to it because we were doing the whole like historical comparison and who's the best now versus the best ever, etc. Is obviously at the end of each season, it's one of the reasons I like the fact we've got seasons now. We actually have like real sports, an actual window where you get the transfers. You don't just get them trickle throughout the season as much. And you can even add in the whole VRS angle actually gives people an impetus to do the deal around exactly that time, because you want to get the invites to the tournaments, which means you need to buy the core, etc. So if people don't know that whole story, which the best example of it is in the past, teams like Heroic, Falcons have bought cores so they immediately get the VRS invites, whereas the obvious contrast is NIP. If you only watch the biggest tournaments, you're like, where was NIP all year? It's like, oh, they were grinding me. They had to just grind 1 million online tournaments, like literally play CCTs. And then at the end, they had to do all those little small lands. And that's how they got to the point where if they'd have won those OT games, they would have been in like stage three of the majors. It would have been interesting. So and that's one thing we're going to consider with some of these moves is if people didn't buy a core, then are they actually willing to go and do that? Because I think that's where we actually start, Pimp. If people have seen the trickle of the news about the 100 Thieves lineup, where obviously the first thing was they signed Rain, and then they immediately announced, even before they signed the other players, that he was going to be in game leader. So it's quite a bold move. It implies to me, by the way, that was just like part of the conditions of him joining. It's like, I want to be the IGL, and I don't know, maybe I want to pick the players, some shit like that. There was a rumour recently, by the way, that actually, supposedly even Simple was one of the people they were considering trying to get to BC Game, but not BC Game, to 100 Thieves, it just didn't happen. And they've now got Glaive, that's official, he's the coach. Then the rumour is that they get Device, but the reason why it seems like that is accurate is because, obviously, if you see the rumours from Astralis, it is implied that people are leaving the team, like Magus has already been benched. And then the final thing is, there's also now a rumour that they get this young, I think he's Swedish or Finnish or something, player. I forget what nationality he's from. This is a young up-and-coming player. And so the basic rumour at the moment is that because teams like, we'll talk about this later, the BC Games of the world, etc., are trying to get the cores, the rumour now basically goes that 100 Thieves is going to go the NIP route and they're just going to gamble on it, this unproven prospect who's not a VRS player, in the hopes that you're just good enough online and in initial tournament, maybe you get an initial invite if you're lucky, that you then parlay that into being in the circuit. Right, that's where I actually want to start, Pimp, because I think on the 100 Thieves one, since there's so many new pieces, especially changing roles, the mix of players is at the moment nothing. Like, there was also a rumour, by the way, maybe they would just get the Astralis core. Maybe it wouldn't just be Device. Maybe it would be like they get the core plus Rain, which, by the way, as an underrated angle, if people don't know, I'll say this for the millionth time. Technically, I believe Norwegian even used to be called Dano-Norwegian. And so, in theory, they are the ones most likely to be able to understand Danish. Because even though the joke is, when Danish is written, Swedish people are like, oh, I can understand some of that. Just the accent throws them off. It just means they think it's like another language to the cat at all. So, I've always thought it's the reason why the Rubinhos of the world did play with Danish teams. So, it wouldn't have been crazy to even have a Norwegian player with Danish players. You could have done that lineup too. So instead, they're going this route where they're going to gamble, seemingly, based on what we have heard from the rumours, they're just going to start online, it looks like. So there's a very real world where Device, here's my joke, Pimp, I said it on Twitter, it's like, wait a minute, so Simple is going to be back in the real Tier 1 lands, but now Device is the one playing CCT and, you know, those random cops where he's just playing like some Russian team you never heard of, and then if they lose, you're just like, nah, that's a bummer, like, what's going on with their career? What do you think of this? Take any part you want of the 100 Thieves.
Yeah, I think it's a great topic to discuss, but it's also super, super nuanced because first and foremost, right, you lined it out right here. Either you go for a core and you almost guarantee yourself that you're part of the tier one, tier two tournaments from the get-go, and then you have to prove yourself, or you build a team from the scratch and up. I think what 100 Thieves may be fearing is that if they're in for the long run, I totally get the angle right here of maybe just building a team that you believe in long-term, as in whether it takes them 3 months, 6 months, or 9 months to actually, you know, grind their way into tier one, tier two Counter-Strike, maybe that doesn't matter too much, you know, in the long scheme of things. If you build a team from the ground up that you actually believe in long term, that would make sense to do. If you want immediate success, if you want to be like, if you want to enter Counter-Strike straight away, if you're the Thieves and you want to be part of the next major in Cologne potentially, then you got to get going from the get-go by buying a core and then hoping that team is good enough. But then you also risk, as we've seen plenty of times, where you buy a core and those are not necessarily the players that you want. So you know that within the next 2 or 3 months, we're going to replace one of those players from said core. And if that core knows that when they're being purchased, then the harmony of the team and the transparency and how that team is going to function is never going to be good. So I think there's so many nuances to it that people have to consider. I'd also say that right now, the VIS is still relatively new, but I feel like it has been manifested to a point where at least the Grahams of the world, you know it in detail, and they can sort of like forecast it and figure it out. And
to be fair, they do have the best VRS guy. That helps, I guess. I hadn't thought that angle. True.
Without a doubt, like people can underestimate how smart he is in that regard. And he can probably forecast and figure out, you know, okay, we need X amount of points, or we need X amount of placements in X amount of tournaments before we are invited into, let's say, the Blast Showdown, you know, which has 32 teams. There's quite a lot of teams, you know, who gets to be part of that. And quite a lot of teams who also say no. So maybe you just have to be a top 40 team before you get the first invite into a bigger tournament. So I think the route to do it like NIP did it is not necessarily as long as it seemed to be in the beginning of the year when NIP did it. There's a lot of CCT tournaments. There's a lot of smaller tournaments that are popping up. You have the Fisher, you have the Starladder, you know, let's see how many of those survives, but Starladder announced the tournament next year, et cetera, et cetera. So I think there'll be more of these smaller tournaments popping up at all times who want VS status. So I don't think it's as big of a gamble as many people may feel that NIP, as an example, did back in the day, because VS was uncertain. They didn't quite know what was up and down, whereas I feel now it's been more established. So I think that's something you have to consider first. I like the idea, personally, that you're building a team from the start that you actually believe in, that you pick 5 players that you believe in. Whether or not it turns out that one of those players have to be replaced after 6 months when you figure it out, or 3 months, you know, he didn't fit in anyway, whatever, that's part of building a team. But I don't like the idea of building a team where you already from the get-go know that you're buying a core, you're putting it together with Rain and Device for that matter, if that was the case, and you know you're going to replace one or two players before you had the team you want. That almost feels like a waste of time in a sense. So I like the idea that the Thieves are seemingly backing that they know the system well enough and they believe in whatever they're building well enough that they will qualify for the tournaments they want within the time frame they have set. And that's a that's a respectable way of doing it, I'd say. Because I do feel to some degree that buying a core and then hoping that core will be good and then you watch it fail and all of a sudden you now have a core that used to be part of the top 30 in the VIS, now they fell out of it because they were put together with 2 players that didn't fit in, et cetera, et cetera. That feels like the cheap and easy way, but also the more like the least respectable way for me, almost in a sense. So I can't help to feel that what I see from the Thieves is that, okay, we're okay with maybe not, you know, playing top tier tournaments within the first 6 months, but long term we're building the team that we believe in, or we're building the foundation that we believe in. I would rather have it like that when a big organization comes in than just someone comes in with a lot of money, buys a core and then fuck it up, sort of like BC Game is trying to do. You know, it does feel like a project where it's like, yeah, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, who cares? You know, it's not a brand anyway that I really care about in a sense, as I would with the Thieves in the same degree.
I also think there's like a level where when you do this move, because remember, actually, almost everyone inside their org is new. Sean Gares has never done this job before. Like, as far as I know, when he was with 100 Thieves in like Valorant, I think he was the coach and DDK was the GM or something, whereas now it's almost like he has that role. Messi also, obviously, I mean, he's got kind of a strange role, even though it's maybe a bit like something he did in Complexity, but obviously that was an NA org and had all those restrictions. Now he's working with Europeans. The other thing that to me is like, I could see them rationalizing it as, well, Rain has to have time to, you know, get used to IGLing, so this will take some of the pressure off him because, you know, it's just online games and you can ease into it, etc. The main thing for me is this: if you're going to do this approach anyway and you're not going for the core, then you may as well, in my opinion, just make all the other players like the party signing. It turns out he's Swedish, I looked it up. Basically, because if you've already got Rain and Device, they are not only very old players, but they're past their prime. Like, if you're not going for the course, you're not, like, having a hold to, like, onto this particular player, just get other young talents who are, like, because I noticed this guy, if you look, if you weren't going to sign a core, he looks like a legit signing because he's 19 years old. He's a player on the team Alliance, which, if people don't know, actually, at Tier 2 Online, was very good, actually. They were very successful. They beat BC Game and a bunch of other teams a bunch of time. He was one of their best players, and he's one of those players that has like the 30% opening kills, 50% success rate. So that actually is a very positive sign if you think of what they might have in their squad. Obviously, we have no idea who the other two players are, which is the other concern. But actually, as I say, if I'm them, then if you go an online route anyway, don't get the big names, because let's be real, you're not going to get a really top player who's proven, especially not to play fucking online CS. So just get other talents who are good, and then you can not only only potentially save a bit of money, but if they're actually good, like presumably this guy's already good online, you could just get people who are good online too, and then that'll get you through the CCTs and all the rest and get you the points and get you to the tournament, hopefully. The one area I'm concerned, Pimp, is this, and it's your old mate device. Because, bro, I'll first of all do my best to, like, find a good angle. So the good angle, there's two, is one, he's not in Astralis anymore. Who knows what the demands were on that team? Who knows how motivated they were at the end when they thought the org was going to be sold and they knew maybe, like, who knows what happens with our careers? Can we even get new players? It's not even really known. Like, if you think of the last signings they did of Huxley and Magisk, they were just people who were available, mate. They weren't doing anything. They were just sat there not playing. So it's like they weren't going out and signing some top talent who was Danish. And then... So I'll make the angle of like, okay, it's a classic thing in football is the notion that fresh surroundings can like reignite you, etc. It is sort of true. Like the amount of times a player's like kind of like off the boil or is even like a bad attitude in one team or famously that a manager's just failing. But you put them on a new team and within like 2 weeks, they look really good. And you're like, what the fuck? And the worst thing is the old team's always like, why couldn't we get that? It's like, because they obviously needed the change of scenery, didn't they? The other angle would be this. I'll give you the best possible angle. Since everyone's brought up that if you go to Lance, they're all concerned that device is old, not as good, and he has that issue where it feels like every 6 months he has to miss a LAN. Well, the good news is if he's just sat at home, presumably that wouldn't be as bad for him. He'd just be playing normal CS. He's in his home environment. He doesn't have to travel. Look, it's stress, but it's a different type of stress. But my one problem is this. It's what happened with Simple Bro. Because when we get to it later, I have to say, if they hadn't have bought a core, which the rumour is that they have, for BC game, then I'd have been out on that story, mate. Because first of all, I can only watch so many fucking tier 2 online games, even if it's simple. And then secondly, like, I could just tell, even though he did try really hard the first 2 or 3 months, you can tell it didn't excite him, mate. It got boring. And the worst thing is, this is what people don't get about the grind. Oh, it's not that the teams are actually as good as like the tier one team that kicks your shit in when you go to the tournament. But first of all, when they kick your shit in at the tournament, you just know they're all legit good LAN players. So you can almost like go, okay, that makes sense that I lose to Vitality and they destroy me. What a lot of people who've been top pros cannot handle is being destroyed by a player where they know the old Nico fucking quote from COVID of like, he's got the Coca-Cola and his best seat at home. It's the idea that that guy, because there's no pressure online, and for him, it's like the world championship player. You, whereas for you, it's like, I've got to just win this random game to get the points. Yeah, that guy tryhards like a motherfucker, and it's really frustrating when he beats you because you know, like my old friends in VP used to say, we would beat him on LAN. I'm like, yeah, but the game wasn't on LAN, was it, man? That doesn't help me there. You still fucking lost, didn't you? So my concern is that the grind is, it's too many games, mate. It's just like, you might have to play 3 months of just every 2 days, a best of three. Also, mate, if you ever see those online games, it still is like working CS at a tournament. Sometimes you have a game at 11 in the morning. Sometimes you game 7 p.m. at night. Sometimes you've seen them where it'll be like, wait a minute, I thought they were playing this. Oh, they just played two games that day. They play one tournament at 1 p.m. and then they play another one at 5 p.m. That grind will get to you. It's not that the games are the hardest of all time, but it's essentially, I would give the analogy, it's like going back to like a boring office job where you're not totally vibing with everything you're doing. If you'd had some, you know, job where you were creative or you oversaw all passion projects, stuff. That's what I'm a bit worried about, because I feel like almost any top pro, especially the older ones, they always tell me this. I don't know about you. I know pros that were amazing. Like, I'll give you a random example. I know a guy, this is a funny one, from League of Legends. There's a legendary French player called Soaz who played for Fnatic for like a long, long time. And he was a very, very good player, by the way. But I asked him, and here's the joke, Pip, in 2013, went to him because he'd been playing League of Legends for 2 years. He thought, well, you know, the game probably only lasts a couple more years. So he told me in 2013, and by the way, I think he stopped playing as a pro in like 2020 or something. He told me, like, I don't really actually like the game anymore, really. I just play for competition because I like to, you know, to see if I can beat the best, and I like to come back next tournament and adjust. And the joke with that is the competition sustained for 7 years. Like, I actually thought when he said that, shit, he's probably going to like retire next year or something. So I do think a lot of the top pros, part of it is going to the LAN. It is feeling that excitement of making the arena, or you get the upset. Like, think about, by the way, the FaZe guys. Before they had that major run, they had that tournament they couldn't play with Rain, and they might randomly fucked around and beat Spirit. That's like, oh my, we're back in the game. Yes, we're not irrelevant. I really worry that someone like Device is just going to get ground down by the million random games where you look at the teams and you're like, I only know two of these names. Who are these guys? And then they beat you. What do you think?
I get the point, and I'm also afraid that could be the case. But I also, when you say that, I can't help to feel that what I remembered as a player myself, and maybe it's come, we come from different generations, right? Back in when Device started playing Counter-Strike and I started playing Counter-Strike, we kind of grew up with it. We played official games 24/7, right? And I'll be completely honest, what I hated the most was practice. Practice is boring as fuck compared to playing official games. So I'm even in a scenario now where it's like, maybe View Device, the change of scenery is one thing. A point to that is that I can't believe that when he finally, like, he went to NIP and that's a change of scenery. Obviously, it didn't work out for many reasons, personal, most of it, right? Gets back to Astralis. I think there was a window where I would argue that Device could have joined G2, could have joined FaZe, you know, in 2014. He could have joined a lot
of... You say could have. I think a lot of us just hope he would have for one last ride, yeah, you know. A bit like how exactly. I notice you always tee this up, like I think the same thing. Part of me doesn't ever want Kyogre to leave FaZe. But if FaZe actually isn't good, then just leave and have one last year elsewhere. I do sort of have that vibe.
Yeah, exactly. Even Device, like I was even advocating for Device going to Na'Vi. You know, he could have had a big international stint at a big team where it could have been fun working with Blade, etc. Now he ends up in 100 Thieves. So I feel like he missed that big window of opportunity to actually get an international move that would have been exciting for everyone. Now he's trying to have to reinvent himself, as you described. I will say the point I'm trying to make is that if you're bored of playing Counter-Strike, to a degree, and I sensed that a bit from Device. I think he said during an interview leading into the major that he struggled with motivation, right? He didn't play as much as he probably should have. He didn't train as much as he probably should have. And that's a very ballsy thing to say publicly, because you're basically telling people to, you know, to flame you in a sense. You know, you're being open about your flaws, which I respect, but also you put you in a vulnerable position. If that's the case and he does need a change of scenery, then I almost think that change of scenery is way, way better going into a team like the Thieves, where you're forced to play official games a lot, you know, because let's say he were to join Na'Vi, and the way Na'Vi does it is that they boot camp, they practice, they boot camp, they practice, they go to a tournament, maybe they play, you know, 8, 10, 12, 16 maps tops, depending on how well they do, then they go back home, then they practice for another month, do another boot camp, and that grind, I think, is significantly harder for a player like Device, who's been there before, who's done it before, than just playing online games. Just as you said, like, you play for the competition. You play to look at your stats. You play to compete. And whether you want it or not, you know, practice is boring. Practice is not as fun as playing an official game, even though that official game is in CTT. You know, I think most players will feel that. I think most players would even say that it would be nice to have a practice tournament for the Tier 1 circuit. I think most players would even agree that had the scene not been as saturated as it is, you know, then a league like ESL Pro League, where you actually played 16, 18 games online against each other, where you could use it sort of as practice, but there was sort of something on the line, but it made sure that you didn't have to play five practice games 5 days in a row. You know, you actually had 2 days during the week where you had something to look forward to, where you could test out stuff and test your shape. I think that's a motivation killer. So in that regard, that would be my counter argument to that maybe that's what Device realizes as well, that even if he is, you know, in the last year of his career, the last couple of years of his career, maybe it's more fun to play an awful lot of competition games and an awful lot of, you know, official games instead of just having to power practice, go to a tournament with Astralis, go out after playing 6 maps, go home, do another boot camp, bow out of the tournament, go home again. Nothing is more demotivating than that. I personally would rather, you know, than sit at home for a month but play 2 online tournaments in that period where you got to compete, whether that may not be competition at the highest level to begin with. There's always the prospect of, you know, making it to the next level and qualifying for the Tier 1 tournaments and maybe being motivated by that. So I'm not too worried about that. But then there's other things that I worry about, you know, whether or not he is not motivated anymore, whether or not that both him and Rain is motivated in their new roles. And as you said, like, there's also, I feel there's a time where this works. As you saw with Simple, he maybe had the grind in him for 2 or 3 months where he was opening it up online, maybe the best online player.
And by the way, it's implied, if you saw the rumors, that actually maybe the reason he was motivated is maybe the team at the time was even saying, oh, we're bidding for this core and we get. So you probably thought, like, it only lasts a month or so. When it goes 4 or 5 months, I'm not surprised, like, you saw in the fucking things, mate. It looked like he just went back to partying. He even fucked off out the game and started playing Dota. That was real. Yeah, there were some matches he wasn't even in the team.
That's the thing, right? And I think that's something they have to worry about as well. They have to make sure that whatever project they do from the get-go is motivating long enough before they take that next step. And that's something, you know, that's as a player, if you're a Device user, yeah, of course, you know, 6 months, 12 months, yeah, I'll do it, you know, because it feels fine now. It's motivating in the moment. But when you're 6 months into that, like, you have no clue how you actually react. And that's where you got to keep people like Sean Garris and Graham and people, you know, running the team accountable for that, because they basically have to put themselves above and beyond the player and sort of forecast? Do we think that if it's not going as planned, that it will just all just erupt? Or do we think that the player have the psyche and the mental capacity to grind another 6 months if that's required? You know, also assuming that both De Vrij and Reyna are on long-term contracts, it'd be ridiculous to sign them for 6 months or 12 months to get go. So yes. I think there's a lot of risk involved with this, but I don't think the online grind is necessarily a negative thing. I think some players, at least speaking from personal experience, I would prefer it that way. But I also grew up in an era of Counter-Strike where we played online games all the time. And now we're in an online era where, you know, most teams complain about having to play two online games at a blast tournament before they go to a LAN environment. And
yes.
And frankly, I think people should, you know, accept it. You know, it's as we spoke about during the major as well, is yes, online Counter-Strike is not LAN Counter-Strike, it's not the same, but it's part of getting to wherever you want to win your tournament. So you want to be considered a great team or the best team or a team that should go to the LAN, well then show us you're versatile enough to win your online games to qualify for the LAN tournaments. I do feel that we, and again, it's probably because I come from the era I come from, where every tournament you had to qualify by playing online qualifiers. Like we had to play the fucking, you know, double elimination bracket where you had to play maybe 10 or 12 or sometimes, you know, 16 maps to qualify for a LAN event. And you had to earn it every time. Whereas today, partnership teams, you know, teams through BIS, it's been the last 5 or 6 years, you're almost guaranteed if you're on a good team to go to the event. So it's sort of like a period where people maybe have to mentally also recalibrate themselves to a point where, okay, sometimes maybe we gotta earn it, you know, sometimes we have to go through an online game or an online qualifier or whatnot in order to make it. And I don't think that's too scary for players like De Vrij and Reyna, because they grew up playing Counter-Strike in the same era I did, where it was actually fun. It was more fun to play those qualifiers. It was more fun to play official games than playing practice 24/7.
Yeah, if you're someone like a modern pro like Ziwu, the only time you've ever played online CS in years was just the initial Blast Bounty game that qualifies you to like the LAN or whatever. That's it. Like, otherwise, you never play online CS. Like, team online CS is face it. It's like, or scrims. It's not. It's never like a match that counts for something. Also, on the thing about the modern pros maybe having like a deluded worldview, because obviously they all want the business class flights and the lovely hotels and you get the time and the shot, right? Well, another thing a lot of them have learned from these small LANs and VRS is what it's like to be an old school pro. I saw during the major there was a LAN, I think it was like a DreamHack in Sweden or something, bro. Maybe it was DreamHack Winter, I would guess. And there was a pro, I forget which one, it was like a low level pro. And he was complaining like, lol, does Valve know this is a VRS tournament? And someone was like, why? And he said, because right behind the, like, there's no admins and basically there's like music playing behind our, you know, game. Yeah. And I wanted to tell him, bro, we used to play tier one tournaments like that with like dubstep just booming out the back, and you had to just hope that like it wouldn't have been, I'm not even sure, it wouldn't have been, I don't even know what it had been, TeamSpeak back then, whatever the voice software you used, it better be good, otherwise you won't be able to hear your teammate, you can't just do the usual thing where you just shout to them, etc. So yeah, that is just the new reality. It's why I actually do think that some of these VRS lands, you sometimes see one where on paper it's like two teams, you know, and you think, well, they must just win the tournament, and they don't. Like I saw those like Draculands, bro, some of the actual real teams lose to nobody's, like a Polish mix or something, or fucking an actual team that's not even a squad. So, all right, another team I feel like an obvious one to talk about is this BC game one. Because as I say, the news that's leaked out now, and I actually think this would have helped the project a long time ago if people had known this, is when they first signed Simple, because people know, right, that is actually a like a casino betting site. Well, they obviously have loads of money, and then it leaked out initially just what Simple gets paid and what the buyout was. So it sounds like, oh, right, well, that's why Simple plays there then, because they pay megabucks, and, you know, at the time, actually, I was told his contract runs down in a few months anyway. So the interesting thing for me is, apparently, though, they were the whole time trying to make a team. They were trying to get maybe like Game of Legends core, or maybe as like now, the Heroic core. They were going for squads where these are teams that in theory will sell. They're not in a position that can go too crazy. But also, they also wouldn't be bad cores either. You get that core and then you add Simple, you're basically right back in the mix of like, at least you can win some games at a tournament. You know, you might actually be able to like make the odd playoff, especially by the way, if it was a PGL or something, you'd have a chance to. You could actually make a little run as the Game of Legends and Heroics of the world have. So the rumour now goes, because they've cut all those other players from BC game, you notice, they've cut the players exactly the right amount you need, the three, and then, so they've just kept Simple and Electronic, and then the rumour goes that they're going to sign this Heroic core. And I'll even say this, I won't say what happened, but I'll even say, you know, when, you know, nowadays, because likes aren't visible, you even sometimes get a hint on what's going to happen, because pros will just like your opinion, and you're like, well, since only I can see that, as long as I don't leak it. Now I know that you maybe agree with what I just said there. So if you look at the heroic team, I'm just going to assume because of roles, like spoiler, they're not signing Alcarin because he's got simple to AWP, right? Then also, they don't have an IGL, I'm hoping. I don't know on that one. So is Electronic the IGL? If not, then presumably you're getting Krizen. There's one player you'd probably sign. If you look at like talents and history, the Nalo guy was very hyped and seemed like he had some skills. And then the last one is, it depends if X-Cloud's there. Maybe X-Cloud. You look at the different roles, he's more like the entry type player. Like, if you made this squad, Pimp, in theory, because of VRS, you would basically get invites immediately. You'd be into some of the early tournaments, and basically it would be simple returns to LAN, except the difference between Falcons and FaZe ones were, they were standing ones where it was more like, you know, let's see how it goes. This would be like a real team. What would your thoughts be on a team like this? Are you hyped for it? Are you interested in it? Is it a good move?
I don't know, man. Yeah, it's a good move to maybe try to save Symbol's engagement in BC game, because I also saw, like, again, without knowing the inner workings, like, when he was playing Dota instead of playing Counter-Strike, did he refuse to play an official game because he was playing Dota instead?
Something like that, yeah.
Not sure exactly what happened, and I'm sure there's nuance to it, but still, that to me sounds like a player that's checked out, you know, who's not happy with whatever project. So now they're probably going to do everything they can in order to keep him re-engaged into it, but I'll be honest, you know, Electronic, Symbol, and I think Andu is still technically part of the team. I don't know if he's officially been cut from BC game yet, but if I'm not mistaken, then we know Symbol. We know his history with, you know, mood, swings, you name it, up and down, motivation, not motivated. We know Electronic to be the same tough player to play with. Andu was, as far as I'm aware, you know, let go of Gamer Legion because he has attitude problems. It's like you build the perfect cocktail, Molotov cocktail, basically, to do stuff like, you know, Symbol, to just say, fuck it, I'm going to play Dota instead. I'm not wasting my time right here. So do I believe in the foundation of that whole idea of building a team like that? Not at all. You know, is it a good idea to build the heroic core around them? Sure, if you want to play a couple of tournaments and see if it works out, then sure. And maybe that reignites, you know, Electronic. Maybe that reignites Symbol. But I'm also getting to a point where, at least for the sake of Electronic, I've kind of lost faith, you know, in a sense. I think Symbol is a generational talent of Counter-Strike. And we did see him in that online period, you know, own it and actually get back to a very respectable level where I'm like, okay, if you can do that, then there's still some talent left in you that is never going to disappear. I haven't seen that from Electronic at any point the past 4 years. You know, he's living off his goodwill. He's living off being friends with Symbol. He's living off having played with him before. So do I believe in Electronic to be part of that, you know, new foundation that can become a top 10 team? Not really. Do I think the heroic core is strong enough and has strong enough personalities to come in and motivate a guy like Electronic or motivate a guy like Symbol? Like, who's keeping them accountable? That's my question. Like, who's the voice? Like, who's the blade of that team? Who's the GM? Who's the coach? Who's the guy who's going to keep those players accountable whenever they want to play Dota, whenever they're not working hard enough, whenever they act out in practice? I don't see that, you know, at least from the outside. So as much as I would love to see it, as much as I would like to believe in it, there's just a lack of accountability, it seems like, in a team like that, especially when you mention the players that you mentioned. I think Krizen to come in as an in-game leader would be a great signing. I think Electronic should just focus on being a player, without a doubt. I think Nilo has been a very interesting prospect as well, but even he has had his issues, you know, benching himself and sitting on a bench to finish school, then come back. Like, seemed like a player with an awful lot of talent who's never really fully dedicated himself. Maybe that's coming now. So there's just too many questions, Mark, for me to be like excited about it. Would I love to see Symbol come back to LAN? Would I love to see him play, you know, the Blast Bounty and play maybe even one of the bigger tournaments out there, a Krakow or something like that? Sure. But do I believe that when that team shows up, that it's a team that I should, you know, take serious on their count of making the playoff or making big waves? Not really, you know. It's the same as when Symbol stood in for FaZe. You're watching the game to watch Symbol. You're not watching the game to watch the team or how they progress. And I feel like that's how it's always going to be until they find some sort of foundation. And maybe that's the first step, you know, to sign a call, get into the tournament, and then you can attract better players and you can switch out players, as I described before with the Thieves. You know, over time, you know that you're going to sign 3 players from Heroic. Maybe you tell Symbol, just, you know, bear with us for 3 months, then we can change a player, we get enough VIS points, and then you can get whoever you want, et cetera, et cetera. But building a team like that, especially on such an unstable foundation, I'll see it before I believe it. I think that's the best way to phrase it.
Yeah, on the simple part, like I agree with you. The real problem is it's different. It's like when he was in Falcons. It's different if you're watching the game because it's an event. There's novelty. Like, oh, my, Simple's playing again. Ooh, this is going to be interesting. But you notice he didn't just go, wow, one of the best players in the world's playing. Let's watch him dominate CS. No, in fact, actually part of the thrill even was when he would have a bad game. Oh, is he bad now? Oh, my God, he had a good game again. Like, it's that. That's just almost like a spectacle. I know what you mean. Like that also won't last, by the way. Like, if the team itself is just like, you know, 22nd in the world, people will watch some of those games, and really dedicated fans will watch it simple anyway. But people will just tune in for the first couple, see them lose a few BO3s, and then be like, actually, I'm out as well. And I know what you mean. The real concern for me, specifically with Simple, is I don't think, believe it or not, he did a comeback to be just like in the 20th team of the world and losing group stages of LANs. Like, I don't think he's that guy. Like, actually, a good thing about him, believe it or not, is that even though it can manifest as being very negative to his teammates, I do think he demands that people at least like are in the mix to win, or at least, you know, go to the playoffs and feel like there was a chance to win the match. I think he was the person, you even saw this at the end of his time as a good player. He was the hardest on those fucking young players that were coming from the academy team, even though normally you'd think, mate, you could do the most good encouraging them, but it's because his whole shit was sort of like, yeah, but I'm not here to like babysit a kid, I want to win now. Like, we just lost the semi, remember, they used to lose all the semis. Like, I want to be in the final, I want a chance to win, I don't want to be like, oh well, get him next time. Because for the guys from the academy team, semi-finals is fucking sick. That's the best thing you've ever done. For Simple, semi-finals is failure. He wants to add trophies. He's at the Carrigan level where it's like, I'm trying to get all the trophies on the way out the door. So my main concern is, I think this team, if you get a couple of early LAN invites, I think you have to just hit the ground running. You have to like get a fluke win, or Simple has to be way better than you think. Maybe even things have to just gel immediately. If that happens, there's all chances. Because as you say, you probably only have to survive a few months and show a bit of potential. And then if it is true, by the way, this org has money, mate, if Simple's legit and it's a legit location, you can get another player to come over, and suddenly you're one, two players away from actually now you're a real team, and we're talking about you, not for because it's Simple and Electronic, but because maybe this is a good team and it has aspects to it. On the Electronic one, I hate that you even did that signing, bro. I mean, that, I don't know internally, but that even looks to me like, I don't know that it's as bad as people think in terms of Simple. I don't think he said, please get me Electronic. I actually think it's one of those ones, bro, where, you know, the old story of where people know that back in the day, SK, the Brazilians, wanted to get Simple and Flamey, but then they couldn't get them. So then they just got Stewie and Tarek, right? The story never went that way. What they did for real was they decided there weren't Brazilian players that they could sign that were going to be like able to be number one in the world. So what they wanted actually was just two star players from another team, and then they're going to put them in their squad. So I've heard, bro, it was actually like a shortlist like this. The top was Simple and Flamey. Then it was like, you know, Nico and Rain. Then it was like Shox, the French player, and someone else. Then, you know, you went down. And then the idea was when he went all the way down and they all said no, then it was like, oh, Stewie and Tarek. But that was like, you know, fucking right at the end of the list. Like, I feel like it's the same thing here. I feel like you don't, even Simple doesn't go, bring me washed Electronic from VP. I think he, you know, you've got like seven names, and then the maybe he's not even on your list. And they just go, we could get you Electronic. He's available. And that's where it's just like, oh, fuck it, just bring it for now. But, you know, we'll see. Because I know what you mean. Electronic is one of the biggest fall-offs that bums me out, bro. Because it was 3 years ago he was good, guys. I'll give you the contrast, because when you do this, you'll realise how many years have gone by. So if you remember back that epic run at the end of 2017 that NIP had, where they won IEM Auckland, the famous one where Rez went crazy and they beat FaZe Clan and SK Gamer, the best two teams in the world, right? Go forwards 3 years from that, and you're at the end of 2020 when those players were in Dignitas, and wasn't everyone like, oh, this team fucking sucks. Like, they should probably just retire. Like, get Ryan Forrest and Frank. They're all washed. Like, they're not good anymore. This team's going nowhere. Like, bro, that's the same position Electronic's in now. That's 3 years after we gave a fuck about him as an individual player. And even worse, bro, I've got an interview coming out with a player that played with him. And it's what I've heard behind the scenes. People think Simple's bad, but the difference is, most of his career, if Simple went apeshit at you, he might have also been right. He just was being an asshole. And you knew he'd carry the game. So a lot of people will actually swallow it as long as you win them the game. The problem you're going to have with Electronic is, I've heard one of the reasons a lot of these teams die when he joins them is absolutely he is going fucking crazy on people and like way too harsh. But then he's not a very good player and he wasn't a very good IGL. So it's like, And no wonder the mood gets ruined. Like someone told me, like, if you look at some of these teams, like some of those players would join their teams and they were top, like Russian players, and they were all like real talents. And then you would just see after a few months, the numbers just went down and they got benched or kicked. And it's like, that's the electronic effect so far, unfortunately. Like, what player has he ever played with as an IGL so far that got better and improved? I can't think of one at the moment. Literally none. I think they've all gotten worse. So the electronic angle, I'm actually really scared about. That's the one where it's like, what's he going to do in the team? Is he even going to be relevant? Does he even give a fuck? Remember, people have implied he's the one that mysterious tweet was about, where it's like a pro who wanted to join the team demanded a helicopter ride for him and his wife or something. Well, first of all, the wife part makes it, so it could be electronic, because people famously know he has a wife. And remember, he was even getting in trouble for her in Na'Vi, because maybe she's like, I don't know, demanding or was doing social media posts. So put it this way, it's not that that's proof that's that, but it's just, it fits the story, doesn't it? If the shoe fits and all that, as we say in England. And then I also think, lastly, when you make this squad, it sounds great to get all these young players, right? But the difference is, when we say get a young players for 100 Thieves, Rain is a super chill. He's the onk. He's like an uncle. He's like the guy who's going to put his arm around, hey, kid, come on, like, get. Listen, I did this with Frozen and the others, you know, we can make a still. Device, he's a pro. He's a guy where Device would never scream in someone's fucking face. He might tell them, like, you know, we have to step our game up, guys, and be firm with them. But that sort of a team you can bring young players into. Mate, throw in some of these players. Like, yeah, I know what you mean about Nilo. Listen, Nilo's a talent. But first of all, you've done a very Swedish thing there. Like, got to finish school first before I come pro. Mate, you have to be Zebu to do that, because otherwise the world passes you by. And if you'd have actually played when you'd initially joined this team 1 year ago, you could already be established by now. Maybe now we'd be talking about you as like a top talent, and maybe fuck Heroic. Maybe you'd be going to like a phase or something like that. You know, maybe that would be on the table. If you take, this is why I'm also scared it's Nilo and Youngster, bro. Because if you're telling me you're throwing two little Swedish players to Simple and Electronic, mate, that is like in the Jurassic Park where they're lowering those like cows into the fucking raptor den or whatever. Like, you're going to be torn apart, mate. Like, you aren't even built for that sort of an environment. Like, it's going to be like one of those scenes in a fucking movie where in America they go to the you know, the drill sergeant at the boot camp, where he's like, I didn't know they could stack shit that high. So, mate, the whole point of why they do that, bro, is because they want to weed you out. If you're going to break and you can't handle that, they want to get you the fuck out in the first week so they don't waste their time training you. Like, fuck. I hope the people who run BC Game know, like, these aspects I'm talking about. They're not really just making an HLTV fantasy team, and then they're like, right, it's Football Manager, right? Press the button, it just plays now. It's like, no. There's so many more dynamics in a team.
That's what I fear as well. That's what I feel, you know, without knowing BC Game, without knowing who is running it, without knowing who is the one keeping them accountable, if anyone, then I have the same notion that it does feel like a Football Manager team that's just going to go south. And I think it's an excellent point, you know, as you said, like, the Device, notoriously known for always bringing in a new guy into Astralis and saying, Bus is going to be the next
thing
in them, like, you know. Then you bring in, fuck was it, Stare, you know, and he praised Stare, and he was like, he's almost like being a father figure for these young talent, and I think he could have the same role in the Thieves, and I wouldn't even be surprised if that's part of the reason why he signed, you know, maybe to use that skill set, because there's not a lot of players who have that. Whereas if you're Simple and Electronic, like, it is a nightmare to join them. There's no way around it, you know. Simple for other reasons, I think you're right when you're saying that he demands. As I read Simple, and this is just my, you know, perspective of it, as I read him, he's a player that demands an awful lot around the players around him. And the second he loses faith in the players around him, the second he feels that, oh, I can't teach them anymore, or they are, quote unquote, in his eyes, you know, useless, or they're not good enough, whatever, that's when he loses interest. As long as you listen to him, as long as you show progress, as long as you're willing to work, as long as you're willing to, you know, show that you're getting better over time, then I think Simple is a decent guy to have around you. Like, he'll be on your side, but he'll only be on your side until you're not, which is also a scary prospect. Whereas for Electronic, I've heard the same things as you, and I'm curious to see who you've spoken to. But even when you see some of those vlogs, you know, where it's translated from Russian into English, like, some of the shit he's saying, I don't know if it's poor translation or if he's as fucked up as it sounds, but it's outrageous at moments. You know, it's in the middle of a game, it's around where it's not necessarily game defining, and he's like, he's being the most demeanor guy I've ever heard. And again, with the prospect of it may be bad translation, or it may be a cultural way of speaking to each other that I don't understand. But I bet you if he spoke to Rain or Device like that, you know, they would tell him to shut the fuck up and sit down, you know, in a heartbeat. And the Heroic players are not going to do that. However, one thing that I'm annoyed about when it comes to BC Game and Simple is the fact that he started off so well. after playing and standing in for Face, there were good games, there were bad games. I think we saw potential, but we also gave him a bit of a leeway in the sense that, okay, that was your first big tournament back. You know, you need a bit of time to get accustomed to CS2. Then he joins BC Game. I think the first four or five online tournaments, he's averaging a rating of 1.3. He's like arguably the best online player that's not playing Tier 1 Counter-Strike. Had he just continued that, had he just not had his little Dota, you know, I'm going to play Dota instead, I'm going to lose motivation. Simple, depending on the contract with BC Game, he wouldn't be playing for BC Game. Someone else would be willing to pick him up. Someone else would be willing to take another chance on Simple, because he showed now for half a year that he was willing to grind it out online, play at a high level. And if you're then Face, if you're then Na'Vi, if you're then someone else out there, G2, who the fuck knows, they probably would be willing to consider Simple and give him another shot, you know, to take that extra step up. We even heard fucking the Mongols, you know, interested in signing English players in that regard. What do I know? You know, but just because Simple only did it for 3 months and then he had a following 2 or 3 months where his last four events is very much up and down and it's more bad than it's good, then I think people are like, it's still their own Simple. You know, he loses interest, he loses motivation. We're not willing to do it. I bet you, had he had 6 months consistently playing well online for BC Game, had he just, you know, bit his thong and maybe not got annoyed by the fact that the team wasn't going anywhere, he wouldn't be staying in BC Game. He would be joining a Tier 1 team. I thought that was the whole idea. Loan him out from Na'Vi, show himself for 6 months, then join a good team. Now I feel like, okay, so you were loaned out to BC Game. You showed that you could be excellent. You also showed the worst side of you, so to speak. And now you're fucking stuck in a team that's trying to buy a core where you have to be the catalyst. You have to be the guy that builds a culture. Like, you have to do all these things, whereas ideally, you would just like to join Na'Vi. You would like to join FaZe. You would like to join D2. You'd like to join a good team instead of having to build up a team from the ground up, which you're not motivated to do. So I almost can't help to feel that Simple had an opportunity. He grabbed the opportunity and then he threw it away. And I don't know why. I don't know if he got annoyed by BC Game. I don't know if something happened. I don't know if that's just the level we can expect him to be at. But the last 3 months have been rather disappointing, which is why I think he's not really being considered by any of the top tier teams that will most likely consider to make roster changes.
And then the other thing I'll just throw out there is, technically, there's one role missing that everyone ignores. And that, in my opinion, if you're going to have fucking Simple Electronic, this role is essential. It's called the coach. Who is the coach of the team? Like, by the way, since we're talking about signing young players, some of them, like, if it is the Neil or the youngster guy, they're not even proven players, mate. At least X-Fox played a bunch of lands, you know. Like, these players, again, also, there's going to be this culture clash and you're blending together different pieces. At that point, mate, I don't even just want a coach. I want, like, a coach who's worked with young players, who has the authority to discipline Simple and X.
I know.
You know, who was it going to be?
Tess. All this.
Oh, that was the rumour, yeah.
Yeah, all the shit he had to put up with in VP, he's worked with young players, he's worked in a team that's dysfunctional, he's worked in an environment where big personalities, where he just had to accept that, okay, Snacks is the in-game leader, but it's actually Nico calling right now. Like, he's worked in an environment similar to that, and I think he's very level-headed. I think he has a large, you know, sense of patience compared to where you probably should have. So if anyone could do that, who's a respectable coach, I'd say, and who may be willing to do the job, I think it's Tess. Because I think you're right. Like, you need someone with authority. You need someone where... I think Tess could be the guy who would tell Simple to shut up, you know, at certain times. And I think Simple could, you know, at times maybe listen to Tess and be like, okay, sure, you have pedigree to say it, you have experience to say it, I respect you. But as very few coaches, I think Simple or Electronic, for that matter, would listen to. I think Tess is one of the only ones where I feel like maybe there's a chance, you know.
I'll even give you an angle that I think is pure banter if that move does indeed happen. You will probably remember this, but newer fans is just too old. It's some, like, dark lore shit, right? 10+ years ago, when Simple was just that flip-side kid who we all heard was mega-talented, but he was also equally known for, like, being toxic. And at the time, the rumour even was, maybe it happened, maybe he didn't, ESLY a shout-out, maybe even had cheated at some point in his career. He actually had quite a murky reputation. Early on, he was one of the people, when he played FPL, the early FPL, where a bunch of the pros, JW, and actually Taz was one of them, were fucking upset with this guy, and they actually had, like, an online beef where they tweeted. And I remember there was, like, a thing where, I think it was, like, Nico was streaming back in the day, like, an FPL game, and then Taz, you know, they did that thing where in the FPL game, you join, like, a TeamSpeak to speak with people, and Taz just, like, on stream, like, banned him from the fucking TeamSpeak, because he was sort of like, you know, this kid's, like, at the time, Taz is in fucking VP, a top team in the world, and this guy's just, you know, an awesome run at tournaments. So it would be amazing if they come full circle and 10 years later he is his coach. I could tell you, back in the day, he certainly would have told someone like that to shut the fuck up.
Yeah, that'd be fun, that'd be hilarious. But also only one of the only, like, coaches I see could have an effect. Otherwise, you take someone who needs a second chance, or you take someone like, I don't know, Trace, the ex-Astralis coach.
Yeah, like, he always tweets,
like, something like that, you know. But that's that's just going to be more of the route of heroic. You know, it's not going to change anything. So to be completely honest, it's going to be interesting to see what BC game do, but I'm not going to take interest in them before I see, you know, them moving in the right direction. They need to prove it. They don't get that just by the name value. I don't give a fuck whether you call it simple electronic anymore. As you said, like, I think that's one of the main points to me. I want to watch a team play Counter-Strike because I think the team is cool, and then the team have interesting players that I can buy into. I don't want to watch a team just for the one player that has a name value that's cool, because I will tune in whenever Simple plays a game of Counter-Strike, but it doesn't satisfy my Counter-Strike nerdism to a degree. I want to see a good functioning team and a team that I can believe in with cool individuals that can take him to the next level. I don't want to see an individual, you know, being the entire team. And I think that's what BC game is going to be in the beginning, regardless of who they sign, to be fair.
Right. Obviously, one of the biggest roster moves of the off-season was one of the first ones. It was this one by Team Spirit, a team that actually looked as a world they could have been on a third map against Vitality, and who knows, maybe they could even win the game. They have Donk. So they've made this blockbuster move where they've removed Chopper and they've removed Zwei, and then the idea is Magix is now basically the IGL, not the support development. It's actually Zontix that's sort of taking the potentially support development role. So in theory, also, the both new players are in new roles themselves, actually. It's not going to be the old positions they were in. So I've already done a really lengthy video on this that people can see where I've done all the angles, but I want to get your take on it, because I actually feel like it's the Magix part I'm most interested in, what your take will be. Do you like this move? Do you think it works? Is it worth the gamble? Would you have just done one of these players? What would you have done?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think Suntix makes sense. If he's going to re-enter his old role, then no brainer. There's not going to be any big to that. He also, as you said, like we spoke about it, apparently it was for mental reasons that he left and not playing reasons. So that makes an awful lot of sense. To me, it's also the Magix that I'm not sure if I'm worried about it. It's just I don't know the guy well enough, you know, on a personal level. I like to think that I can read, you know, people. But again, there's a cultural barrier between me and him and how much access we have to the players. And I don't, like, my first hand impression is that is that going to be an in-game leader? Like, does he have in-game leading qualities in a sense? And maybe he does. Maybe it's hidden. Maybe it's always been hidden. But I do feel, if anything, and that's my first hand impression, that this is more a finger to Chopper than it is to anyone else. Like, if you're getting replaced by a guy that's never been an in-game leader, that was at best an average performer in a team, admittedly a player that was willing to sacrifice for Donk, do whatever, you know, buy up the auto shotgun at all times if he needed to, all that kind of stuff. If that's the guy replacing you, I would be pissed if I were Chopper. You know, I would get it if it was, you know, if they saw some sort of light in Boomage, or there was an up-and-coming Russian in-game leading talent that a lot of people thought found off. You know, you're willing to take a gamble, you're willing to take a risk, you know, maybe that happens, there's a generational shift. But for Magix to be reintroduced in the lineup in your old role as an in-game leader, you know, I'm not sure I would be too happy if I'm Chopper. So I agree. I think it's a massive risk. I think it's a big move. I also think it's a move where I could imagine, and I'm curious to see how that's going to play out, but it's going to be a more freed up Team Spirit. I feel like it already was a free Team Spirit. Like, I feel like obviously Donk could do whatever he wanted to do. I think Shiro to a certain degree could do whatever he wanted to do. But I think if even anything else, I think this is just them reestablishing that for next season, that we're not going to be a team like Vitality that have clear defined roles in every single position, and we all do our best to make each other better. You know, I think it's still a team where, and I'm sorry to say to Donk, you know, when he said that he's trying to become more of a team player, he wants to be more of a team player, et cetera. I like that mentality, sure thing. And maybe there's certain aspects that Donk could do in his gameplay that makes him a better teammate, but when you're Donk, just shut up and fret. Like, just be the best player in the world and do what you do, because you're absolutely fantastic at it. And I think if anything, whether that's Harley, whether that's Spirit, I think that's just them confirming that with a guy like Magix as an in-game leader, you're coming in for the first time. That must mean that you're not going the route of being more disciplined, being more tech reliant, being more strategic reliant, etc. You're bringing in a new in-game leader that the more free flow Counter-Strike he can call, the more freedom he can give to the players, the more mid-round decisions that can come from Shiro, Donk, the easier it's going to be for him. You know, sort of like, almost like in a sense what I feel Hunter did in the beginning in G2. He's slowly but surely obviously moving into the role, but when you're being reintroduced as an in-game leader for the first time, you don't want to come in from the get-go and think you need to lead a team like MSL did back in the days, where every single fucking move is detailed, or you have a run path and into the bomb side and you can never deviate from the path and you're running into the bomb side. Like, that's not going to be the future of Team Spirit. So I don't think it's going to change much, to be completely honest. Is Magix a better player than Chopper, individually speaking? Maybe. Is he a better player, individually speaking, in the role as an in-game leader? I think it's going to be somewhat similar. So I'm not sure. And I also do feel that if that is the best decision they could come up with, that's more of a change just for the sake of changing something to give fresh, you know, fresh air to the team than necessarily thinking Magic is the guy that's going to come in. He's going to change the way we play. He's going to change the way we approach Counter-Strike, et cetera, et cetera. To me, it's just more of the same, but maybe with a breath of fresh air. And if that's what they want, if that's what they feel they need, maybe it could be a blockbuster move, especially getting Suntex back. I think there's a lot of upswing to that. So maybe Magic doesn't have to be better than Chopper. Maybe just to have to be as good as Chopper and then let Dunk do the rest. And I think Spirit could still be a team that will win a couple of trophies next year. So I don't dislike it. And I think it's a better and more interesting team to watch in 26 than what I saw with Sway and Tineo when they got in the first place. But I don't feel it's a blockbuster move in the sense that that's going to change an awful lot. It's just going to be more of the same for me.
Yeah, oh, by the way, on the Donk thing, I know what you mean. Like, that's just not the time. Or even if you're going to do it, mate, don't say it like that publicly. Because when you're basically the best player in the world at exactly what you do, I don't want to hear that, like, I'm going to try some other shit to help the other. Like, no. That, I'll give you the example. I think it's a perfect football example. That would be like Erling Haaland going, you know what? Actually, I know at the moment I just score, like, for fun every fucking game. Maybe I just drop back a bit more and play a bit of, you know, like, central midfielder or something. Like, why would you do that? Like, that, no, the other way around. Like, your coach's job is to get someone to do that because you're already doing your job at a 10. Not even just good. You're doing it at a 10, bro. Like, other teams wish they had that player. So, I know what you mean. Even though you might have just meant it in the interview to, you know, take pressure off people or some bullshit. Yeah, like, nah, that's like a young man's folly, fucking up. What? Remember, we say don't fix it if it isn't broken. Right now, it's not broken. It's running better than anything's ever run ever. Like, don't, I wouldn't touch it. And the joke is like that story I told you back in 2019 where Simple just changed his mouse. It's like, bro, don't. Just keep that same mouse till it fucking breaks. Right now, even if it's just a mouse, it's clicking like a motherfucker, isn't it? Just stay with that mouse. Don't change your mouse pad, nothing. We'll wait until you have a slump, then you can change your fucking mouse pad. All right, the other angle as well, by the way, I want to pick up on the thing you said about Chopper. Bro, this is one of those things I'm really bored of. The same thing happened with other people, but at least they got the hype when they're on the team. Here's what I don't get. If you actually look at these last 2 years, if you're Chopper, you can't just say it's Thorin and Maui Snake or whatever who are disrespecting you. Bro, your results in any other team would get you like IGL of the Year nominations. Even if you get those, no one ever considers you for the role. Everyone outside the Russian scene doesn't even seem to ever bring your name up. They even talk about Donk and Giro and then now Tinita. They never mention you. You're not even considered like an important piece. And then also, now you've left. Here's another thing that's a bad news. Notice there's no rumor. Like, oh, maybe he goes to VP. Maybe they could bring him into it. No, there's not. There's no hype. There's no speculating. And then lastly, what I'm going to do is you'll like this one because you've had to go through this. When Snacks got removed from G2 and then all these fans went crazy, right? Where's all the fans going crazy about Chopper getting removed? Chopper has way better results than fucking Snacks had, bro. He won a fucking major. He's won all the prestige events in a 2 year span. Essentially, every few months he wins an event. Like, at worst, they were making semis and finals. They could have won the. I have almost never in my life seen a player who wasn't in. No, by the way, not many people are asking for him to be caught when he was on Spirit. But the second he has been removed, and as we say, not removed for an upgrade on paper, just removed for a player where it's like, will it even work? There's no one really mad at this move. I don't feel like anyone. So I it's hard to tell because I've never really rated him that much anyway. But like, does no one actually give a fuck about Chopper?
No, that's what it feels like. But I think that's a counterproduct of having Dunk and Sion. Like, that's a counterproduct of having two players who, you know, both eye test, but also obviously statistically speaking, is carrying your team so much. And especially considering that some of the issues that Spirit had was that T-Sides looked a bit lackluster. But I also do think that if you're Chopper, and that's, again, it's so hard to dissect an in-game leader because maybe Chopper wanted to play more structured Counter-Strike, but maybe Chopper's also aware, as we had the discussion in a Counterpoints episode as well, like long time ago, where it's like, if you're Chopper, your job is to make sure that Dunk thrives. And when Dunk thrives, then your next job is to make sure Shiro thrives. And when those two are thriving, then let's see if you can add another layer, you know, with Tanea or Sway or whatnot, you know. But you could also have the approach that, okay, I'm going to set aside, you know, maybe Dunk is not going to thrive to 100%. Maybe Shiro is not going to thrive to 100%. But I want to play structured Counter-Strike. I want to build a foundation that is so, so strong that we can even afford maybe to have not Dunk play well. I don't know if Chopper ever wanted to do that. I don't know if Chopper had the ability to do that. But you're kind of restricted as an in-game leader, that when you have Dunk and Shield, you just have to do that. Like, that's the only way going forward. That is to make sure that those two players perform, and that doesn't reflect good on you. That reflects well on their stats and how they perform. And sometimes you win a trophy, yeah. But even when it's just, like, even when they win a trophy, well, Dunk has a great tournament, MVP. It's his fault, you know. It's his. He's the reason. It wasn't like Chopper called them into winning a tournament. Like, he's never really gotten that, I guess, recognition for that. And I don't know if that's unfair. I don't know if that's a fair adjustment or a fair assessment of Chopper. Again, I hate it when I have to value non-English speaking in-game leaders, where it's very hard to figure out exactly what they're saying. Like, I can't stand behind them at tournaments and get a sense of how he's calling, voice of tone. You know, there's obviously a cultural barrier. There's a language I don't speak. So it's very hard for me to have a strong opinion on that. But part of me thinks that maybe it's fair enough that he didn't get credit, you know, or a lot of credit for winning the tournaments that Spirit won, because Cologne, well, Dunk won it, you know, and back in Katowice a year and a half ago when Dunk had that amazing tournament where he broke out, you know, it was Dunk winning the tournament. You could have called Rush B 15 rounds in a row and you probably would have won it regardless, you know. So in that regard, it's very hard to assess him. And I think that's where you're seeing the result of right now. The most people, they simply don't know how to rate him. You know, maybe he's okay, maybe he's good, maybe he's bad. Fuck knows. But given the fact that we don't know, and we don't really have a strong opinion on it, nobody seems to care. And I think that's where it's coming from.
There's one last move, but this one actually, I'm amazed, hasn't had that much like fanfare around it. I think one of the biggest moves is this suggestion that Mouse is going to make two changes. Like, remember, this was a team where there's been this big discussion of like all these Furia fans who apparently only watched CS for the last 3 months, where they're just like, how can Mouse even be on the list? It's like, you do know they're in like every fucking semi. They've like been in a billion finals. Like, again, if you want to do like who were the best teams were, maybe I would pick Furia over them. But if you look at consistency, they had an amazing, essentially only Vitality was more consistent this year. Even Spirit wasn't as good. They just won more tournaments. So the rumor goes that it's actually two players get removed. Supposedly Yimfat is actually going to get to go to another team. It sounds like he's actually going up in the world, maybe, or at least sideways. He's going to another team and he's wanted by them. Maybe that is the Falcons move. Who knows at this point in time? Then the rumour goes that Brolan gets benched. By the way, not as shocking to me. He was like a rookie at IGL, and like they just did that move because they got rid of Shuir. And people imply, you know, maybe some exertion takes that role. And then I think it was Overdrive suggested, this is the only player we've heard about so far, that PR from Gamer Legion will be one of the players to join the squad. Right, thoughts on this? Like, first of all, do you like Mouse doing a move? Would you like them to keep the same roster? And then thoughts on any of these specifics?
I like Mouse, and because I like Mouse, I want them to do a roster change. I think we've seen the full potential of that lineup. Like, it's not going to... 26, if they come into the next season with the same lineup, same coach, same in-game leader, nothing's going to change. Maybe they'll win a trophy, you know, occasionally, which they haven't really been able to do outside of the inclusion of poker. But I don't think much is going to change. So I would like to see them try something. And I think the team is even at a point where they're like, okay, listen, we tried. We went through an entire season where we were second best or third best or fourth best at best. And to do that as a player, like being so, so close but never getting there and then still keep believing the next tournament, like at some point you just got to stop believing. And I think they got to that point after the major where if we go out in a quarterfinal like that to face, we're never going to win a major. We're never going to win a big trophy. Like, let's try something new. So I like that they're doing that. I also have heard the Yimfat thing, and I think that's quite... It's quite a public rumor, you know, whether that's Falcons or somewhere else. I'm not quite sure. I think it is Falcons, and that would make an awful lot of sense instead of Tezzes.
Yeah.
That you actually bring in a guy that is playing the role and that is his bread and butter, you know, compared to Tezzes, who was forced into a role. Feel sorry for Tezzes, but he'll join another great team. He's a great player.
Yes.
Don't worry about that. I've also heard that the one-to-one replacement would be PR, as PR have shown both in Gamer Legion that he can play and occupy different roles. Maybe he could even play instead of Exertion if he's the one moving into an in-game leader instead of Brolan. But I've also heard that he's you know, potentially playing some anchor roles and has played a bit of anchor roles in Gamer Legion. So maybe that's just a one-to-one replacement. I think Mouse are considering... I don't know if Brolan has been benched already or if they're thinking about it or if there's been conversations about it or if Exertion want to move into an in-game leading role. I personally would love to see Exertion not do that. It almost feels like for me it's another electronic one. You know, I haven't seen peak Exertion yet. You know, there's still certain flaws to his game I think he can get better at, but I think overall he's a great, great player, and I think it would be a shame if he doesn't explore his full potential before moving into an in-game leader role, to be honest. So personally, I would probably prefer to keep Brolan or scout someone, other in-game leader, if there's anyone available. Who knows? If you can attract a guy like Kerrigan, that would be nice. Obviously, he's married to FaZe, but I think one roster change is enough for Maus. Two is, that's when I start to worry a bit if you're overcooking it. Also depending on who you do. Mainly for the reason that if it is two roster changes, I agree, it probably is Brolin being benched. And then it would make an awful lot of sense to have Exertion, you know, move over to an in-game leader role. But I don't know how you feel about that. I would love to see. I hate when a player that has a lot of potential make that move before he's ready to make that move. Yes. You know, Apex did it when he's explored what he could do as an entry fragger. Like, and he was fucking great at it. And then you make the move. Electronic, sort of to a degree, had explored what he could do as an entry fragger. I think Electronic probably regrets doing it, you know. But anyway, we saw the best of Electronic. Then you get to move into an in-game leader role. I think Exertion can still be better in the role he has right now. He's great, but there's still another level to his gameplay. So please wait a year or wait 2 years. Do like Nico, essentially say that at some point I'm going to make the move. You know, I have the desire to it. I think I have the skill set for it, but now is not the right timing. And whether that's in 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, who cares? But I think it would be too soon for Exertion. And if that is the case, that's when I start to worry. Because if you just replace Jim Fat for PR and you give the team a fresh breath of air, I think that could be enough, you know? Whereas if you start to play around with the in-game leading duty of Brolin and you... Either you promote Exertion or you sign another in-game leader that is more a sidestep instead of a clear upgrade, then I'm not sure that's the way to go for now. So I'm curious to that one as well. I'm really curious to see, first and foremost, where Jim Fat is ending. But I also do want people to take notion of, I think he's been the most disappointing player in Maus this year. I think if anyone you could point towards be like, you've underperformed compared to what you did in 24 and compared to what we probably, you know, we gave you a new contract. We kind of begged you to stay for 25, to believe in this project. You agreed, you signed the contract, you probably got a massive pay upgrade, but you haven't really been delivering to the level that we expected, you know. So I think sending you now and offloading you to Falcons, which is a team that needs you, that have the money to do it, and we kind of get a freebie, you know. We balance our budgets a bit more. We can allow maybe, you know, for a bigger signing of an in-game leader if that's what we want. I think it's a very smart business move for Maus, and it's good for Jim Fat, it's good for Maus, it's good for Falcons. Like, I see no losers in that trade. PR is going to do fine if he's going to come back. I think they have a buyback clause, I've heard, at least. Yes. I'm not sure if that's confirmed. So again, yes, from a financial standpoint, makes sense for Maus. The one that I'm not sure about is Brolin. I don't think Brolin is irreplaceable, but I want it to be a clear upgrade if you are going to replace him, and please no Exertion.
Yeah, I actually think an underrated part, I actually think both Spirit and Maus seem like they're doing very good GMing jobs, actually, the way they're using the bench, yeah, the way they're getting people cheap and then getting the right signings when you do, because now they've done it like a bunch of times. They did this with Shuey, if people don't know. That's why they got to test him out, almost like a loan in football. Turned out he got to the final of the major. Some, you know, skip forwards a few months, he's back in Maus. Like, that's perfect. Remember, it's not like you get them back for free. You don't just pull them back. You have to buy them still. But the idea is there's a set clause and you can activate it, etc. I think that's a great way to do business. That rather than just like you benched and kicked and then 2 years later, you're like, well, shit, he was in my team. I couldn't fucking add that player. So I like that angle because he, by the way, is the most obvious person you airdrop straight out of game. I thought he actually could have gone to much bigger teams. Like, I was surprised he wasn't on like the new G2 or something. Like, I think he's a very talented player. He's like one of actual, I would say, is one of Ash's best successes so far in terms of players specifically on Gamer League. So I don't mind that signing. I think he'll do well in Maus. My biggest problem is this. First of all, on the impact thing, I do think that's an example of why in your career, I've actually told many people this, put it this way, I've said this on shows. When Snappy was deciding at the end of 2023, do I go to Falcons or do I just stay in Ents? And even though in Ents, they were saying, look, you know what, we can get the sponsorship to match the salary, or we can give you like one of the best salaries still, and we can still keep the rest of the gang around, you know, all the things you want. I told him, yeah, but what you're gambling on there is, what if they don't? Like, what if, like, the team gets way worse within 3 months? What if you, then you're just thinking to yourself, well, shit, I could have been Falcons. By the way, God forbid you stay like that and then Falcons becomes a super team, wins everything, and you're just the idiot, like, fuck, why didn't I do it? Mm-hmm. And what you're doing is you're trading, like, your optimal situation ends now for what could be an even better scenario, and if it's worse, at least you can say, this is what I actually told him, at least you can say, well, now I'll never have to worry about that. I tried it, I knew it wouldn't work. It turns out that is indeed what happened. Right? The obvious problem, I think, here for your impact is, bro, you could have been in Falcons. Like, all the times this year, they've been this insane team. Now, obviously, you didn't know at the time, but they've got three star players. You could have just been in that Tessus role. Maybe you have a bunch of trophies. Instead, you did the loyalty thing for Maus. You stayed in there. You probably thought, when they get Spix as well, like, mate, we actually win tournaments. You won once in a little PGL. That's it. And it doesn't matter how many semis and finals. You didn't win. I imagine that bombs you out. And I'm sorry, you're one of the reasons they didn't win. You are one of the people, I agree with Pimp, who underperformed to an extent. If they'd have had a better player than you, they probably could win these tournaments. And then also, it just shows you, by the way, how those roles that people don't want to do, no good player wants to do those roles. That's why even when they're slumping, Bit and Yimpa are in every single conversation of who should go to Falcons, who should take this spot, make a super team. Like, even if they're slumping, you just know, right? But they actually are seeing people who are specialists at those roles. And if they ever get good, they are the Messies of their teams. They're worth their weight in gold, aren't they? So that one, I think Yimpa leaving is the right move now. I also think he was shitting Mouse at the end, so just replace him anyway. I'm with you. I hate the exertion move, mate. This was one of the best players in the world. It's just, yes, he had choking issues. By the way, some of the best players ever have had those. And when they get over them, they win everything. And they have all their top ratings, the MVPs of the tournaments. What I hate is he's way too young for this move. And also, think about the implication of why it's happening. How many fucking times do I have to see the aggressive rifler make good secondary calls or call one T side of a map and go, I should be the IGL? Has it ever worked? Has it ever worked? I don't know if I can think of a single instance of ever working. Because even Apex waited till the end of his career as an aggressive player to become the IGL and when they had to. Like, I've never seen someone just do it when they still have some prime left and it work. It's why I'm with you. I don't blame Nico for holding out. As long as you can still do 1.2 ratings at tournaments, wait until you're at a 1.1 or 1.05, then you go, fuck it. At this point, it's actually diminishing returns. I may as well switch to the new role. Because if I'm them, by the way, you've got such a good core, just get an IGL. Bro, just get someone who actually IGLs the game and put him in the team. You could immediately be really good. And then lastly, my other angle is this, which is we haven't even heard a rumour of who the other player is. I hate that, Pimp, because it's one thing if it's like, right, I want to sign these two players, so I'm going to remove these two players. This is also a move where it's like, just fuck you, Brolan. It's like, you're out. We'll figure out who comes in. Also, if you are Brolan, by the way, he's 23 years old. If you remember when he was a Mouse before he became IGL out of necessity, he was still a competent player. Like, if I were him, bro, fuck IGLing. Switch back to just being like an entry type player. You're 23 years old. You could probably also be on a tier one team and actually do something in this fucking scene and be a relevant player again. Like, I actually think also people would have given you a lot of credit if Mouse had won. They'd have gone, oh, maybe he did actually make the role swap a lot. I think a lot of people are in my position, which is I've always thought IGL swaps are really overrated at the beginning because you can still keep a lot of the concepts and structure from the previous IGL. What you really see, and if you look at Mouse, this isn't a great sign, is let's look 6 months later. Let's look after everyone's picked your game apart. You have to evolve, probably change your map pool, change up a bunch of strats and positions. Now you have to work as an IGL, bro. Can you make it work then? And for me, he wasn't bad, but I just thought he was average. He was just average. And I could, and as you said, the real warning sign is this. Oh, I see people like Exertion and Torzy choking their tits off on stage, but my brain was never like, replace them. I was always like, Carrigan, if FaZe doesn't work out, bro, take the helms of this squad. Don't you just win tournaments, mate? Wouldn't you just be like in all the finals? So I hope if Exertion is doing the move, then I hope we're bringing in another big name player. Hope we're not just bringing in another up-and-comer. Because I also think if you're Mouse, you were right on the cusp of winning. That the moves you make need to be the ones that now take you to the championship. They can't just be like, we're building for the future and we're getting young guys. No, they have to be like that. Think of what FaZe did before they did the Jacob move. Every signing was supposed to take you to the top again. It was supposed to be the last thing to help you. Let's be real, not even win the major. You were trying to win the major. If you're Mouse, I still think the goal should be win the major. You've got Torzy under contract. So far, the others, despite the fact that they've been through like four off seasons now where I thought they were all going to get signed by the other teams and they don't. I thought by now three of these players would be in Falcons, G2 and FaZe. You know what I mean? Like, I'm amazed they've all stayed. So if you've kept this core together, it has to be to go for the championship. We can't be rebuilding.
No, I agree. And I think the point for me is that I think first and foremost, I think Brolan is severely underrated as a player. I agree with you. As an in-game leader, it felt like he was a bit average. I think the companionship by Cyclone as a coach, I think he helped him out a lot, you know, to mask for some of those flaws, you know. But as you said, over time, you see the lack of direct impact in terms of the calling. I feel like Mouse was always a team that showed up to tournaments well-prepared, always had a game plan, always had a pretty good idea of what they wanted to do in certain games. But maybe sometimes they needed that extra creativity that would come from the in-game leader and not necessarily Exertion as a mid-round caller. As a player, though, like the only reason why I feel like the only reason why Brolin turned into being an in-game leader, obviously, is I don't know what happened with Shuhei. I don't know if we ever find out officially, you know, but when you signed Spinks to Mouse, and that was a good signing for Mouse, then you had to make space for Spinks. And the only way to make space for him was to move Brolin into the in-game leading role. Otherwise, you'd have to replace Brolin one for one for Spinks. But Brolin was too good to be replaced. I think his 2024 rating finished at a 1.1, which is pretty goddamn good for a player like Brolin in his position in a team like Mouse in 24 before they got really, really good. In 24, they were decent. They were like a what, top five, top four team when they were peaking, but not necessarily a world beater, not a team that would go into all the grand finals that consistently would beat the teams beneath them. But he was having a good year, statistically speaking, and I remember him playing well. And as you said, he's 23 years of age. This year, Jim Fat, in similar roles, have had a rating of 104. I would almost argue that Brolin could step into Jim Fat's role next year and do as well as Jim Fat has done in Mouse, you know. So I don't think you necessarily need to replace Brolin. Let's say that Exertion has a deep desire that he wants to be an in-game leader. Well, then bring in PR and let PR take over some of Exertion's roles, or, you know, split up Brolin and Jim Fett's role for PR and Brolin moving forward, so they get a bit of both each, and then Exertion could be an entry-fracking in-game leader, which history, as you said, haven't really proved to be working out too well. Let's see if that can function. But I think Brolin is underrated, and I'm even thinking, as we speak of it right now, if Mouse do decide to get rid of Brolin, if you're the Hunt the Thieves, sign him immediately. I think he would be a fantastic signing to a project like that, and you would put him into a role, you know, to be a backup to Rain, to be a secondary caller, to be a very stable rifle, and to be a rifle that could take up some of the positions that you don't necessarily want your new star prospects to take up. So either way, I think Brolin is gonna be fine. But I also do think there's a world where if I'm Brolin and if I'm Mouse, you know, we speak of a team that value, you know, I guess they valued a lot that Jim Fett stayed within the team, and he showed a bit of loyalty. And I think if Mouse want to show any loyalty back, and it's a word that I essentially hate because I don't think you should be playing on a team just because you're loyal. But I do think Brolin have shown me enough as a player, also given his age, that he's 23 years of age, that he could probably slot into Jim Fett's role or something similar as before and still be a functional player for Mouse. However, do they believe in that? You know, has things gone south with him as an in-game leader? Has that created an attitude? Has players around him lost faith in his abilities? I don't know. But from the outside, I feel like Brolin is far from done at a high level. So maybe there's also a world where they keep Brolin and just replace Jim Fett, you know, with PR, and then they figure out the in-game leading duties between Exertion and Brolin and make that switch, which we also have seen in teams like 3D Max, you know, where all of a sudden you have Gravity being an in-game leader and he's still on the team, but not as an in-game leader anymore, the guy before. So Maka was that who then took over and started to play well. So I think there's a world where they could be inspired by what 3D Max did with him and all of a sudden released Maka to a new level.
Right, that is it for us for this year. Merry Christmas, and we'll see you in 2026.
Merry Christmas.